Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Three Martini Lunch, the latest in our series of year-end awards, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've already given out awards for Best Political Newcomer, Most Honest, the political figure we were most sorry to see go, Rising Star, Fading Star, all sorts of things. Three more categories today, starting with the worst scandal of the year. Jim?
Sure. I'm going to go with probably a very popular pick amongst conservatives, the IRS abuses that were really big news in the spring, and then not so much as the year wore on. I want to salute Eliana Johnson for doing some fantastic reporting, tracking the very long, tangled effort to hold any sense of accountability to Lois Lerner and the various other folks. So many really repugnant aspects of this scandal. First, the fact that basically the entire one of the most intimidating government branches of the IRS and all of its implied menace and fear in which Americans live in fear of an audit brought to bear on some of the, you know, ordinary Americans joining Tea Party groups who just wanted to have their voices heard. Notice they didn't take on, you know, Karl Rove's American Crossroads or any of these organizations that have teams of lawyers. No, this was the government big guy picking on the little guy. Also kind of equally repugnant was Obama insisting that he only heard about it from the media and he's as mad as anybody. And actually, a few weeks ago, he kind of basically dismissed it, poo-pooed it, and said it was not much of a scandal. And it turned out it was nothing out of the ordinary. The increasingly rote blaming of rogue low-level employees in Cincinnati, that's kind of become a go-to excuse for all kinds of government agencies when they're caught doing things they're not supposed to. And then ultimately, I mean, you know, Peggy Noonan did her best to bang the drum on this. There was a lot of coverage of this in the spring, but then it came and went. And there really was this, I would say, collective amnesia. But, I mean, you know, basically, because there was never a smoking gun tying this directly to President Obama, telling the IRS, go get the Tea Party groups, a lot of folks in the media kind of believed that this was not a big deal and that, well, this really was a matter of low-level employees. We found one liberal group that may have been subjected to the same kind of scrutiny. And actually, if it wasn't the same kind of scrutiny, it was close enough. And the entire mess kind of indicates just what the politicization of the federal bureaucracy, the degree to which the federal government itself has become a partisan tool under this administration, and just kind of assess the culture of unaccountability that runs rampant in Washington, Greg.
Our first agreement of the award season. Yes, I picked the IRS scandal, too, and it's not like there weren't others to choose from. You still had the aftermath of Benghazi, the NSA scandal, the Associated Press with the Justice Department and James Rosen, all sorts of other things going on out there. But the IRS is the one that I think really ought to hit home with people because, like you said, it's the government going after people they just disagree with politically, namely Tea Party organizations. And what's worse was the fake outrage that the president had. He basically fired the acting IRS commissioner who only had a week left on the job anyway. No other heads rolled, including Lois Lerner, who is an obvious person to show the door, if not prosecute. We do know that it went all the way up as far as the chief counsel's office in the IRS, as well as Lois Lerner. So this was in Washington and even got to the office of political appointees. We have found out in subsequent reports that now the president is quietly trying to change the law so the government can do this to 501c4 organizations to make sure they go through a ridiculous amount of scrutiny before they can get some tax-exempt statuses. So the way that this administration abused that arm of the government, which has a tremendous amount of power to ruin lives and, like you said, basically skate on responsibility for it, was really, really disappointing. On to the next award, and that's Best Political Theater, Jim.
There are a couple of good nominations here. I'm willing to get you probably went with one of the other ones. But I'm going to go with, actually, it doesn't come from a Republican. It comes from a Democrat. I think some of my favorite moments of the year came during Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius's publicity events done across the country. She would go to demonstrate how easy it was to use healthcare.gov, and it would crash as she was using it. And then, you know, oh dear, you know, she did one in Pittsburgh that was like this, one event in Florida was like this. At Tennessee, there was a person who came up and gave her a copy of Websites for Dummies. The site crashed during her testimony before Congress when she was trying to assure lawmakers that they had everything under control. So it's kind of like in the scene in The Naked Gun in which Frank Drebin is telling people to disperse, there's nothing to see here, while the fireworks factory blows up behind him. Or, you know, the other common argument is, you know, Kevin Bacon at the end of Animal House, All Is Well. Pick your film metaphor, but I think the idea of the administration attempting to show people how easy it is to use when it's not for shtunking working For me, it was the single greatest, most amusing moment of political theater in 2013.
Yeah, mine was close to that. Same topic, different type of theater. And that was the Obama administration scrambling on defending its previous promises. Most particularly, if you like it, you can keep it. Remember, they tried for a few days to trot out the lame. Well, what we really meant is you could keep it if it hadn't changed at all since the law passed. And the media, even the liberal mainstream media, completely collapsed on that argument. They would not defend it, and they took the administration to task, and they had no opportunity to continue to push that malarkey, even though that was what was in the bill. But that, of course, is not the way it was sold. And so then the president trotting out his weak, well, if the insurance companies will let you, you can keep it for another year. And if they don't, well, that's not on us. And he literally said, I'm doing this so you can't blame the Affordable Care Act for the fact that you can't keep your health insurance, when everybody, I think, knows the difference. So very interesting that we both picked political theater that was intended to work in a way that we would not have preferred. But when it blew up, we really enjoyed it.
My other runners up would have been the Rand Paul and Ted Cruz filibusters.
Ah, yes.
And I think you can make a strong case, particularly for Rand Paul's, which actually did cause a slight change in policy, in that the administration assured us that they would not drone anyone sitting at a Starbucks without a trial. They can try you in absentia and then drone kill you at the Starbucks on U.S. soil. So I can drink my Starbucks with great clarity and reassurance these days. Ted Cruz's filibuster in opposition to Obamacare right before the government shutdown was a valiant effort, I think. I think it clearly didn't quite have the effect that he wanted it to have. But I think, you know, I salute anybody who's willing to talk for, was it 21 hours or some seemingly inhumane amount of time. So I salute both of those guys. But I think overall, just, you know, the look of helplessness and helplessness on Sebelius's face took it for the year.
On to the third one here. Worst political theater.
The worst political theater for me was the shutting down of the World War II Memorial during the government shutdown. Folks who are students of you know, government fights, spending fights and budgeting and waste in Washington are familiar with something called the Washington Monument Strategy. And it goes back decades, and it basically would come whenever they try to cut the funding for the Department of the Interior. Those running the agency with, you know, the department would say, you know, if we take that 2% cut, we're really going to have to shut down the Washington Monument. And everyone would say, what? You know, they'd react with, you know, shock and horror. And, oh, okay, quick, let's restore that 2%. And it worked for a lot of years and years and years. And obviously what it was that if you were a government agency and any cut of your budget was threatened, you find the single most popular thing that you do, and you say that, you know, the cut is so draconian and so deep, you know, extreme, you'll have no choice but to cut what most people would consider to be one of the core missions of your agency. You know, you can't spend less on staplers. You can't spend less on any other area of your budget. You have to shut down the one thing that the public knows and recognizes and sees as a good thing, as a valuable service. We saw a lot of examples of this. I think the fight with the World War II veterans, the idea of shutting down an open-air memorial, is a fantastic example of that. Turned into kind of this like grotesque abuse of veterans to prove political points there. And it was, you know, we never really got any good answers as to what exactly was going on with the National Park Service. You'd like to think some National Park Rangers would not allow themselves to be used as pawns in a political fight by the administration. On the other hand, it's very tough to ask somebody to do something that's going to risk their jobs. And so I just kind of think that was a politically gruesome moment in from a rather shameless administration.
Tremendous amount of agreement today. That is mine as well. But you got to throw in the shuttering of the White House tours when sequestration kicked in. That was a particularly petty one as well. Yeah, the president shutting down open air memorials. There was a farm that used to be under the auspices of the National Park Service just outside Washington, but doesn't take any government funds anymore. They shut that down as well. They put cones up so you couldn't get off the George Washington Parkway to park at Mount Vernon, even though Mount Vernon has nothing to do with the National Park Service. Overlooks to see Mount Rushmore, just very, very petty. And yeah, especially to use high 80s, low 90-year-old World War II veterans as the pawns in this was really, really disgusting. And to some extent, it went both ways. I obviously put more blame on the president for using the National Park Service in that petty way. But there were Republicans, members of Congress who went down. There were some who actually physically moved the barriers, which was a nice touch. But then they all made sure they got their pictures taken with the veterans, too. And that, I think, a couple of times went over the line as well. So
this is the sort of thing that this category was made for.
Yeah, it was an easy winner this year. So fear not. We will have different answers for some of the other awards moving forward. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
See you next time, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please be sure to join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.